Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. There are some exciting pennant races this year in both the American and National Leagues as we approach the baseball All-Star Game break just a week from today. But there are some troubling signs about the future of baseball. Attendance is down in a number of cities, in some places by as much as 25%. And this year, five teams are on a pace to lose more than 100 games. That's something that has never happened in the history of baseball. What's needed to improve the future of this game? That's one of the topics for our special panel today on the Vermont Edition Summer Baseball Show. With us today, VPR's Mitch Wortlieb. We all know he's a big Red Sox fan. Burlington Representative Kurt Wright, who, like a number of people in the region, is a huge Yankee fan. And VPR's Amy Noyes, another Red Sox fan with a lot of passion for baseball. All three panelists have a love for the game, and they certainly care a lot about the future of baseball. It's great to have you all here today.
Thank you, Bob.
Great to be here.
So before we consider some of the issues to strengthen the future of baseball, I've got to go around the table here and get a quick look at how your teams are doing. We're about halfway through this six-month season. Mitch, briefly, what are you happy about?
I'm happy about the Boston Red Sox. I mean, it seems so unusual to say that growing up as a Red Sox fan. I remember the bad old days, but they've won seven in a row, 13 of their last 16. They have the most prolific offense in all of baseball. They're leading in nearly every category. They've got a guy named J.D. Martinez, who is not only just filling the role that Big Poppy played in that power in the middle of the lineup, he is in some ways surpassing it. He's got 28 home runs already. That leads the majors. He is batting well over 300. You've got Mookie Betts. You've got a wonderful pitcher in Chris Sale. You know, there are problems like there are with any team, but in general, the Boston Red Sox are playing phenomenal baseball, and Bob, they haven't even played the majority of their games at home yet. They have been on the road for most of this season. Most of their games the rest of the way after the break will be at home. There's very little to complain about with the Red Sox right now.
All right, Mitch. Kurt, what do you think? How do you feel about the first half of the season?
Overall, like Mitch, I'm very excited about the Yankees' record and how things have gone so far. I've got to be excited about Luis Severino, who potentially could be the All-Star Game starter next week, who's certainly in contention for the Cy Young Award. This is 2 years after, at a 22-year-old age, he was 0-8. Now he's been 28-8 the last 2 years. Also, the bullpen has developed into the deepest and best bullpen in baseball with Chapman, Betances, Dave Robertson, Chad Green, Adam Ward, etc. Aaron Judge is not having quite the electrifying season that he did last year, but he's still hitting over 280 with 25 homers and 60 RBIs and a ton of walks and a 400 on-base percentage. And Stanton is getting better and better. Is up to 270 with 22 homers and over 50 RBIs. He's gonna be there. The second half was his big half last year, and it looks like it's going to be this year. As well as all that, and I think we're going to talk about the concerns after. But as well as all that, in each of the last 2 years, the Yankees have had a rookie who electrified New York. And it was Gary Sanchez 2 years ago, 20 homers in the last 2 months. It was Aaron Judge with one of the best rookie seasons of all time last year. This year, it's two different rookies, Gleyber Torres at second and Miguel Andujar at third base. And without those two rookies, the Yankees would probably be seven or eight games back right now instead of just one game back on the loss side.
Well, we've got another happy baseball fan with Kurt Wright. Amy, what do you think about the beginning of the season, the first half?
Well, like Mitch said, what's not to like about the Boston Red Sox this year? It's a really exciting team to watch. We have some great new additions to the team. Mitch mentioned JD. We also have Steve Pierce, who hit one over the monster. His first at-bat at Fenway last night. Mm-hmm. Mitch Moreland's doing so great at first base. We have Nunez, who, along with Holt, is really holding up second base despite Pedroia being out. And the killer bees in the outfield are just so much fun to watch.
It's really interesting to see both the Red Sox and the Yankees off to this great start and really be battling for the pennant and the division lead in the American League. Let's start off with Bob in Rutland City. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Bob. I just wanted to ask you, yes, quickly, what they think of the Red Sox, of all teams, having like three of the top stolen base leaders, which the Red Sox never really had in stolen bases, and what they think of a former Yankee, Robinson Cano, who probably would have been the starting second baseman for, you know, the All-Star for the American League if he hadn't got suspended for 80 games for PED use. So thank you.
Yeah. Oh, okay, Mitch, what about the stolen bases?
Yeah, the go-go Red Sox. I mean, these are not your father's or grandfather's Red Sox. I love it. I love seeing them run, and, you know, this is another thing I'm sure we'll talk about. Teams really don't run anymore. They don't steal a lot of bases these days. Everyone's waiting for the home run, but the Red Sox have a lot of guys that can do it. When Mookie Betts gets on first, you can almost guarantee you're going to find him on second. He's hard to throw out. You've even got guys who aren't quite as fast as Mookie, like Jackie Bradley Jr., who has this great timing sense. He knows when to go. His percentage of stolen bases is phenomenal. Andrew Benintendi can steal a bag. And you've got other guys, too, who are just smart base runners who can steal bases, even though they don't have a lot of natural speed. So I like it when the Red Sox run. I kind of wish they would do more of it. But, yeah, having this Red Sox team be on a pace to steal more bags than almost any team in the history of the franchise is phenomenal. It's just another reason, as Amy said, that they're so exciting and so much fun to watch.
Kurt, what are your thoughts about Robinson Cano?
Well, I think it's sad. I think it's sad whenever we see any major star in baseball get tainted by this type of thing. I was sad to see it with A-Rod. I was sad to see it with now with Robinson Cano. Sad to see it with Manny Ramirez, and sad to see the taint even of David Ortiz. So I you know, it's unfortunate. It's sad, and you know. What else can you say?
I would point out that the jury is still out on the David Ortiz thing. Yeah, I think Amy and I both got our hackles up on that one. Not to mention the fact that it may have been bad for Robinson Cano personally, but after he went out, the Seattle Mariners went on a tear.
Oh, yeah, they did.
And
I'm talking about it being bad for baseball.
Oh, it
but
is
Ortiz
bad for baseball.
Failed a test. He did fail a drug test. He complained and whined about it, but he failed a drug test.
And Amy, if you look at this year's Red Sox, you're seeing a team that's hitting a lot of home runs. What's going on here?
It's amazing. What's going on here, I can't tell you. Maybe it's management. Maybe it's not. But it's fun to watch. These guys are swinging for the fences. And like you said, a lot of times they're striking out, but a lot of times they're getting home runs, and it makes for a really exciting game. I think it's exciting for new young fans to watch a game like that, too.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Bill in Burlington. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the program.
Hi, guys.
Hey, we got Bill Keough here.
You
recognize that voice? Sorry.
That's all right. I'm glad to see a balanced panel there. One Kurt Wright Yankee fan is equal to two Red Sox fans.
Yes, thank you, Bill, fellow Yankee fan. Your check is in the mail.
I think baseball has got to reduce the time it takes to play a ball game. 3 and 4 hour games are just going to discourage people from going to the park, in addition to the tremendous expense. But we've got to cut down those baseball games to 2 hours to make it a little bit more palatable, and then maybe fans will go back to the ballpark. But it's great to hear this discussion, and it's good to see the two-way race in the American League, that the Yankees and Red Sox and Kurt were going to prevail.
So, Bill, I got a question for you. What would you like to see done to shorten the game? What are you willing to accept to have that happen?
Well, I'm not to accept is putting a runner on second base.
Thank you. Thank you.
And these time things. My suggestion is to widen the strike zone, make the batter swing more often. And by widening the strike zone, there's no real obvious change. Only the batters, catchers, and of course, I was an umpire, Kurt, you may remember for many years. But one way to speed up a game is widen the strike zone.
I'm not sure I agree with Bill, and that's not just because he's a Yankee fan. Bill, I do appreciate that call, but widening the strike zone, I'm not sure. You're just going to have more controversy over the strike zone issue if that happens, I believe.
No, we don't take any more arguments from that.
Well, the umpire always has the final call, that's for sure.
Bill, thanks very much for your phone call. Let's look at this idea of attendance, and attendance being down across the league, not in every city. There are some cities where attendance is up. Houston, New York, Arizona, and Milwaukee, they are up. Attendance is way down in Miami, Baltimore, Detroit, Toronto. And just to put this in perspective, the Los Angeles Dodgers, on average, draw over 46,000 fans to every home game. In comparison, the Miami Marlins are drawing 9,700 people to each home game. That is a huge difference. Now, Mitch, some people are saying, you know, there was a lot of bad weather this spring. A lot of games got canceled, or it was cold and rainy, and a lot of fans didn't want to go out. But do you think there's more to it than that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more to it than that. If you're living in Baltimore and you're going to Camden Yards to watch your team that's right now, not even at the All-Star break, 37 games out of first place, what are you going there for? I mean, I hope the food is good, but I'm sure it's overpriced. There's no reason, if you're a fan of a majority of all those teams you mentioned, Bob, there's no real reason to go see that game, pay the high prices that Bill, our caller, was talking about before. I think it's a real serious problem. And I know there's always been bad teams in baseball. You can go back through the years and look at the Washington Senators and teams like that that were out by, you know, April. But there are too many now. There are too many haves against the too many have-nots versus the haves. It's really not good for the game. And there's just no reason to go see those games unless you're a fan of the Red Sox in Toronto, let's say. Then you go see them. You know, I was listening to the Washington Nationals game recently with the Red Sox, and I heard this big cheer go up, and I thought, oh, the Nationals did something great, and now Mookie Betts hit a home run. But there were so many Red Sox fans in the Nationals ballpark, that's what it sounded like. It sounded like Fenway. So it's crazy. They got to do something.
But when you have a team like the Marlins, who basically sold half their team away, including Giancarlo Stanton to the Yankees, not sold, they traded him, and other players, they unloaded their team, of course your attendance is going to go way down. But, you know, this is just one of those years. I don't think that this is – I think this is an exception in the way that the standings have gone. I'm still trying to find the five teams that you're talking about, Bob, that would lose 100 games, because I only can find three that if the current trajectory continued would lose 100, and that would be the Orioles, the White Sox, and the Royals. I don't think any other team is actually going to lose 100 games unless they under the current trajectory. But I think, you know, it's a concern, but again, really the attendance that's down in places where they're having just god-awful seasons for the most part.
Well, we'd add to that list, Kurt, Miami
and the Texas.
No,
Rangers,
they're not going
too,
out of. They're
right?
Not going out of rate to lose 100 games. They got over a 400 winning percentage. They're not doing well. They're in last place. But the Mets and the Marlins would not win. Would not lose 100. I don't believe right now.
So we do have this situation, as Mitch described, Amy, the haves and the have-nots. When you're bringing 46,000 people to the stadium for every home game, and you're getting all that money, and Los Angeles has huge TV contracts, and Miami is under 10,000,
right,
which is lower than some minor league teams. I mean, have we developed this gulf in baseball of the very wealthy and the not so wealthy?
We have, absolutely. I think that's part of the problem. But there are other ways to bring people to the ballpark. I mean, some teams just need to get creative. If they're not bringing on big name players, big money players, they've got to find something else to be a draw. And Mitch, I would say Camden Yards has a damn good crab cake.
Have you been there, Amy? Have you been to Camden Yards?
I love Camden Yards.
I would love to go. Yeah, I would love to visit that ballpark. It's beautiful. And Amy, to what you were saying, I think one team that I find so interesting is actually doing what you're talking about. They're trying to do some innovative things. They're the Tampa Bay Rays. And what they've been doing this year is they've been using their relievers as starting pitchers. They'll pitch two or three innings, and they'll pitch lights out. They'll try to put another reliever in to get them the next three innings, and they're doing it piecemeal because they don't have the big-name starters to compete with the Yankees, Red Sox, etc. The problem, though, for Tampa Bay is they play in the worst ballpark in America, or really probably the world, that ridiculous dome, which doesn't even feel like a ballpark. But at least they're trying something.
I would say, and I agree with what you're saying, Mitch, and Tampa does have a winning record right now, but they're in a tough division. But I would say I don't completely buy into the haves and the have-nots. Kansas City Royals, they're terrible right now, but remember, they were in back-to-back World Series winning one of them just a couple years ago, and they're definitely a small-market team. The Minnesota Twins were a wild card team last year. They can never beat the Yankees, you know, but they were in the wild card last year. Oakland right now is actually surging. I don't think it's completely as bad as you think in terms of the haves and have-nots. Now, right near now, we have a year in which the Yankees and I will say I think the Yankees and Red Sox are going to be rejuvenated for years to come because of all the young stars on both those teams. But I have no problem with that.
let's get a quick call in from Barbara, who is calling from Shaftesbury. Hi, Barbara. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just have a theory about the low attendance, and I believe it is ticket price. My husband and I just got tickets for next month, the end of August, and we were searching around, and the cheapest ticket we could find was like $125. They went all the way up to over $300, depending on what team they were playing and what day it was. And then you add on a hotel price and traveling and eating, and it's almost like a vacation just to go to one game. So we had to work hard to find an affordable ticket. What does a family do? How do you take a whole family to a baseball game nowadays? Of course, my age is showing. I haven't been to a game in a while, but I didn't think it went up 400%.
Barbara, that's a great comment. By the time you go to a ball game, and if you happen to get tickets through one of the ticket agencies and the skyrocketing prices there, then when you get to the ball game and you try to get a hot dog or a sausage or a hamburger and a soda and an ice cream, it's open the wallet. This is now turning into a $500 day, Amy. It's really tough on families.
It's true. And Barbara, I'm assuming you're talking Fenway. Are you going to Fenway?
Yes.
It's very hard to, if you're not right on top of it, you can't get first round tickets. Have to check your email inbox every day, and they'll tell you when tickets are going on sale, and then you can buy tickets directly from the Red Sox and not from a second party seller. But even then, they aren't always cheap. You can get bleacher seats for about $20 for certain games. There are ways to be able to afford to bring a family, but it's not anything you can do on a whim. You really have to plan it out and months in advance.
And joining us right now, we're very pleased to say, are two members of the Vermont Mountaineers baseball team. Brian Herman, a pitcher who attends Stony Brook University, and Ronnie Medina, who plays first base. He's a student at Keystone College in Pennsylvania. It is great to have you guys here today. We really appreciate you coming by.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mountaineers play in the New England Collegiate Baseball League. It's one of the best summer leagues for college players. Think of it as a collegiate all-star team. Brian, you're a month into the season, I think, now. What has this experience been like for you?
It's been a lot of fun, Bob. Last summer I was shut down, so I haven't really had the summer experience as most college players have. But this summer has been really eye-opening to see who we're playing, the competition. Ronnie's a D3 guy, I'm a D1 guy, so to see that competition throughout the whole league is fun.
And is this competition at this level a little higher than during your regular season?
Definitely, most definitely. Because instead of, you know, like Stony Brook is Northeast guys, most Northeast guys. The NECBL is getting guys from California, East Coast, West Coast, North, South, you name it.
So, Ronnie, you're first baseman. You're playing virtually every day. You're traveling around to lots of different cities in New England. It's not an easy schedule. How has this first part of the season gone for you?
It's been great, you know. Just going out there, trying to get a job done, trying to bring a victory to the team every day, and not more.
And so how long did you have together as a team before you had your first game? Did you have like a week of practices or something like that?
I came in pretty late. So I came in like third game into the season. So I don't really know what we did before that, but we practiced a lot. Like, we we pretty much have a good team bond.
And Brian, maybe you could express to us, you've probably played baseball your whole life. What is it about baseball that you love so much?
I don't know. Me and my dad have a real good connection with it. One of the stories my mom always tells me is that me and my dad are sitting on the couch watching a Mets game playing. So that's kind of where the bond started, where the love of baseball started. And as I've grown up, I just fell in love with the game even more.
Hey, Brian and Ronnie, this is Mitch. I got to ask you this because I know that they're experimenting with this at the minor league level, but how do you guys feel about when you go into extra innings and they start a runner on second base automatically to try to, you know, end the game quicker? How do you guys feel about that?
We haven't had I haven't had any extra inning games where they have put runners on, but I am not a fan of the decision. I think once you start making pace of play rules in baseball, it kind of becomes like a basketball or football type of thing, where instead of a guy getting his shot to, you know, make a play or end the game, you end it based on time.
And Brian, do you have a pitch clock as well?
In season, at Stony Brook, we do have a pitch clock. I think it's like 30 seconds in between pitches or something around there.
Ronnie, what do you think of these ideas of ways to speed up the game?
I'm definitely not. I don't support it at all. I think everybody works at its own pace. The way I see baseball is everybody gets their own timing. Everybody has their different routine. If you need a little bit of extra time at the plate to get ready, get prepared, lock in, I feel like you should be able to take as much time as you can. Again, not without exaggerating it, obviously.
And Ronnie, when you were growing up, when did you know at what age that baseball was a sport that you wanted to pursue?
I mean, I've been watching baseball since I was four. My father was a big Red Sox fan. The years of Pedro Martinez, Manny Ramirez, David Ortiz, and those guys. I, on the other hand, was a Yankee fan because I was born in Manhattan.
I knew I liked you.
living across the street from Yankee Stadium, it's hard not to root for them.
Oh, man.
When they got players like Derek Jeter, Alex Rodriguez, they've had Bernie Williams, Andy Pettit, Roger Clemens, all these guys. So it was just, honestly, what I liked the most was, like, watching hitters do amazing things at the plate. So, like, pitchers doing their best, trying to get outs and stuff, and then the hitters just producing. That's why I like the hitting part of the game more than anything.
So how are the Mountaineers doing this year?
Well, we got off to a slow start of the season, but if you've been keeping up with us, we've won the last four games and we're getting hot.
Very nice. And it's a short season, right? You're done at the end of the month?
Done at the end of the month, but it is 40 games, so it is a lot of traveling. You know, we're at the field every day. A lot of baseball.
But if people want to come see you, they have to do it in July.
Yep.
How do you guys like the crowds at Recreational Field in Montpelier? You got a lot of support?
Oh, yeah. We definitely do get a lot of support. They treat us out. I feel at home when I'm at that field. I've never experienced playing in front of all these fans, like this much amount of fans. So, like, for me, it's a blessing. Like, I get to show people what I got. They enjoy watching us playing, so... It's great. It's a great feeling.
And guys, when the season ends at the end of this month, what do you do? Does baseball continue for you in some other way?
Well, we are going to celebrate with a championship at the end of the month.
There you go. I like that. I like that attitude.
Like it.
But me, for myself, I'll probably take off a month of baseball because I'm a pitcher, so I want to rest my arm up before going back into the swing of things with school ball. I don't know what Ron does.
I basically just stay swinging. I don't do anything like that's going to put my health in jeopardy or anything like doing extra stuff. So,
can I ask how old both of you are, each of you are?
I'm 22 years old.
And I am 20.
All right. Best of luck to both of you.
Exactly.
So as you look around your league, I'm sure you both are aware that there are people who have played for the Mountaineers and also in the New England Collegiate Baseball League that have gone on to play in the major leagues. I mean, it's a long, long haul, as I'm sure both of you know. Ronnie, is that the dream?
Oh, it's the ultimate dream. That's what we're all here for.
And do you feel like you're progressing on that road to that dream at this point?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I've taken a couple big steps forward. But at the end of the day, it's like my coach Blake says, all it takes is full one scout. Hmm. That's all you got to do.
And are there scouts at your games regularly or...?
I think from time to time, but we're not really looking out for them. We're just trying to get wins.
But the hope, yeah, but obviously you're trying to get wins and win a championship, as you said. But the hope is that at some point maybe a scout sees you and wants to sign you to a professional minor league contract?
Yes, yes. We're all looking forward to that day.
Definitely.
And Brian, the dream for you too is stepping on a field at the major league level and going out on the mound?
Yep, I want to be the next Kershaw or Scherzer out there, bringing the crowds and hopefully winning some awards or something.
What's your best pitch, Brian? If you your go-to pitch?
My go-to is the fastball.
All right.
Big fastball guy.
How fast do you get it up there?
I'm sitting 88, 90.
Nice.
It's not terrible.
No, it's not. We couldn't hit it.
And the backup pitch is the curveball, the changeup, slider?
Curveball. Definitely the curveball. Yeah. Rarely we'll see the changeup.
Do you guys still do a lot of work with kids in camps with the Mountaineers?
Yeah, we just came from a camp, actually, working with the kids.
How's that feel?
I love it. I love the kids. I feel like I'm a big kid when I'm with them, you know, refining the love that I have for baseball.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm currently a phys ed major, so, like, I'm pretty good with kids. I enjoy being around them, too. Helping them learn is probably a plus.
Teaching them your swing.
Yeah, no, not mine. They don't want my swing.
Well, I'm wondering, Ronnie, you know, at the major league level, there's all this discussion about the launch angle of a batter's swing. And is this resulting in more home runs and perhaps more strikeouts? Are those kinds of conversations, do you have those with your college coach or with the coaches here with the Mountaineers? Do you get into discussions like that?
I get into discussions like this, but not with the coach yet, but with players who have actually bought into the launch angle. And I feel like I'm not a launch angle guy, so I feel like it's for whoever, like, whatever works for you. So, like, I was taught to hit the other, like, the normal way, like the regular way, just straight path. And it works better for me. I know if I got into that launch angle or I bought into it, I'd be more of a strikeout guy. I'll strike out a lot more.
Do you think you'd hit more home runs?
I would have to try.
Yes.
I wouldn't know. But, for example, like Aaron Judge, I've seen videos on social media with David Ortiz and Alex Rodriguez talking about Aaron Judge's swing. And it made a lot of sense to me. It's going to be hard for him to catch up to a fastball nowadays that it's running up 98 to 100 from a starter. So I'm not really a big launch angle guy. So,
Brian, you were talking about your speed, your fastball, 88, 90. It's really incredible if you watch baseball over the last decade or two, how fast these pitches are coming now. You've got a number of pitchers who are over 100. What's going on here? Are pitchers just stronger?
I would say that as we progress and move forward into the future, guys will work out based on their body type, so it's more specialized and they could become stronger as, you know, on the mound.
So it's really been an interesting part of the game. If you throw 95 now, no big deal. There are a lot of people throwing 95.
Yeah, it's just kind of middle of the pack now.
It's weird, too.
They're not
Yeah, go ahead, Amy. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, they're not beefy guys. You're talking about body types. I mean, look at Chris Sale.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. And Pedro Martinez was the same way. I mean, he was a whip-thin guy, but he could bring it, you know, at 96, 97 when he had to.
Well, you're listening to Vermont Edition Summer Baseball Show. We've been talking to two players from the Vermont Mountaineers team, Ronnie Medina and Brian Herman. Guys, thanks very much for being part of our show today. It was great to hear from you.
Thank you for having us.
Good luck, guys.
Good luck, guys.
Time for some predictions. Red Sox and Yankees are currently on pace to win 100 games each this season, and yet the team that comes in second will most likely be part of a one-game playoff and would be done if they lose that one game. Amy, how is this all going to turn out?
Oh, it's heartbreaking, isn't it? I think you're right. I think it will come down to that. I think these two teams are going to play have a horse race all the way to the end. And then, like you said, one of them will be in that one-game playoff. And if they don't win it, they're out. And I can see it happening. You know, we had a three-game series recently, and the Yankees killed the Red Sox in two games, and the Red Sox killed the Yankees in one game, and, you know, it can happen anytime.
Kurt, what do you make of this situation that you could have these two really strong teams in the American League, and yet one of them, the one that comes in second, their playoff future this year is going to be determined by a single game?
I love it. 40 years ago, the Yankees and Red Sox dueled all the way to the end and had a one-game playoff. And guess what that year? They were out. The team that lost, and they both won 99 games. This will be a little bit higher than that even. But back then, there was no wild card, no one-game wild card. You won the division or you were out. So I think this is exciting, actually. Sure, if we are the wild card, I'm not going to like it. And if we lose in the one-game wild card, which the Yankees have had two experiences in 2015, we had a one-game wild card and out in one game. Last year, we had the wild card, and we rode it all the way to the seventh game of the championship series. But I think it was a good change. Before we had this system, you had teams that were Joe Torre and sometimes Francona, depending on which team was in which place, would say, I'm going to rest my regulars here at the end of the season because it doesn't really matter as long as I've got the wild card in my hip pocket. Because there wasn't much difference back then. To play a 162-game season and still get a five-game series, the same as the divisional winner did, I think it's important that we have a strong emphasis on win your division and make those teams. Even if you can't rest your players, you got to ride that thing all the way to the end. And if you have to play a player who's tired, then I think that's good for baseball. And I think it's going to be exciting. And I think it may go right down to the final series in Fenway Park in the final three games of the series. And Mitch, hopefully it'll end the same way as it did in 1978.
Let's hope not. It's waiting for that year to pop up.
Mitch, it would be heartbreaking for Red Sox fans to come in second by one game and then be facing that playoff series and having everything end after one game. Kurt's very excited about that. He loves the drama of it. What do you think?
He would be very excited about it because when you look back through the Yankees' history, they're the teams that always win those games. They're the ones who win the 1978 playoff with Bucky Dead. It's very few and far between when the Yankees suffered any heartbreaking losses. But I'll disagree with my Yankee friend Kurt here, because what I don't like about this, and I do agree with you, Kurt, in the sense that the one-game wild card playoff is kind of cool. And you're right that you can't just, rest your starters and have a five-game series instead. What I don't like is if you're a team like the Cleveland Indians, which is sitting in one of the worst divisions in baseball right now, Cleveland's going to win that division running away. But they might finish in double digits with fewer wins than the Red Sox or Yankees, but because they win their division, they don't have to play a one-game playoff. Whereas the Red Sox and Yankees, they could win 104 games, 105. They could have phenomenal seasons, and what do you get to thank for it? You get to play in a one-game, one bad bounce, one bad pitch, one mistake, and your season's totally over. I'm not crazy about that, and I think this gets back to that lack of parity that we have in baseball right now, where everything is so top-heavy, the best teams in the American League Eastern Division, and the Central is just it's a joke at this point. It's a joke, and Cleveland gets to just rest, like you said, and watch the Red Sox and Yankees beat each other into a pulp. I don't think that's right.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Mary in Brattleboro. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. So I am a middle school teacher, and what I am seeing certainly down at our level with Little League and so forth is a dramatic rise in lacrosse and spring soccer. And I can't, I'm already seeing the effects here on that level. I'm not sure, I mean, even though my students might be diehard lacrosse fans, they're still diehard Red Sox fans, but in terms of building enthusiasm from the game from the ground up, there's definitely been a decrease in teams for the Little League. So that's all I need to say. Thank you very much.
Mary, thanks for your phone call very much. You know, Amy, we're seeing even at the high school level in Vermont, some teams, some schools don't have enough players to field either a baseball or a softball team.
That's exactly where my mind went on that too, Bob. And what we're seeing, it's a shame that kids can't play baseball at their own school. But on the flip side of that coin is we're seeing some really great collaboration teams between schools, formal rivals. In my area, People's Academy and Stowe High School both play together on the PA team, and it's made some really unique bonds. So while fewer kids are getting that experience, I don't think it's a lesser experience for the kids who are playing.
And I do think, I hope baseball can do a better job with that everywhere. But I am enthused when I go like to Colchester Airport Parkway, and there are Little League games going on all over the place. They've got like four fields there. There is so much enthusiasm out there for baseball, for Little League. And there's good crowds there screaming and yelling for the kids. And when the games aren't going on, I go by and I'm watching dads pitch to their kids. And I know there's the downside of it, but when I go to the fields in Colchester and in Burlington, it is exciting to see the level of excitement and interest that I see. I hope that we can do a better job of that throughout in other schools and cities.
Well, all of that is wonderful, but you know, I hate to be the wet blanket here, but when you get back to things like this, Sports Illustrated did a stat here that the average time between balls put in play now is 3 minutes and 45 seconds. If you think you're going to get kids growing up watching that on television and sticking with it and becoming baseball players and being enthused about baseball and being fans, think again. This game has a problem, and it needs to solve it, because you're not going to get the next generation of kids.
Well, I've always said that in terms of the game, for me, the game is fine the way it is.
But we're super fans.
But that's what I'm saying. I've always said that in terms of me and for fans like us, it's good. The game is good the way it is. But in terms of the younger generation, there's too much dead time in baseball, and that's what I think they are trying to eliminate, some of the dead time. And I think that's good. I think less visits to the mound, I'm sorry, I have to disagree with one of the guys who was on here earlier. We can't let batters take all the time in the world that they want when they're in between pitches, adjusting their glove and
of
all that stuff.
Of course, batter's going to say that.
But on the flip side, I do hate some of the other stuff that are being bandied out there. The guy of, you know, putting a runner at second base in extra innings, I think it's a terrible idea. And I hate to say it, Amy, but your idea of not having a shortstop maybe also bad idea.
I'm over that.
She got over
that.
Moved on with that one. And I got to say, I've changed my mind on one thing that I know we talked about this in the past, and I said don't legislate against it. But I am really kind of down on the shifts now. I think it's bad for baseball. It doesn't look like real baseball to me when you see these excessive shifts where half the team is all playing on one side of the field. And I think it's actually bringing batting averages is part of what's bringing batting averages down. I know we can say there are ways for batters to take to fix that, but they aren't. And I think there's talk about actually, I don't know how they're going to do it, but there is talk about now legislating against the shift in some way. And I have changed my mind on that. I think that these excessive shifts are not good for baseball.
Well, and Amy, other sports certainly control where players can be on the field. I mean, offsides in hockey.
True.
In football, you have illegal formations.
Right.
So it wouldn't be impossible to say that you've got to have two infielders on either side of second base.
It wouldn't be impossible to say that. I don't think it'd be a good thing, though. I think it's a pendulum, and we're all the way to one side, and it will correct itself. I think that batters will adjust to the shift, and I don't think that we need to make rules against it.
I don't think they will. It's been going on for quite a few years now.
Learn to bunt. Hit the ball the other way.
I agree with you, but
if they're leaving third base side open, hit the ball down the third base line.
I agree with you, and that's what I've said in the past, but as I watch it, more and more teams with the excessive shifts, and I think it's just, I watch it now, I don't care if it's the Yankees or not, it's a turnoff to me. It's a total turnoff.
We're going to be watching the second half of the season very closely. Thanks to our panel today, Amy Noyes, Kurt Wright, Mitch Wortley. Really appreciate your thoughts about the game today.
Thanks so much,
Bob.
My pleasure. Thanks, Bob.